Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and New Hampshire School Administrators Association, representing school superintendents and administrators, championing the education of children in our state every day since 1941. In today's ever-changing world, public education matters, and so does its leaders. Online at nhsaa.org.
And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. More than a quarter century ago, in February 1993, President Clinton signed the Family and Medical Leave Act. The act was limited. It applied to just roughly half the workforce, and it only guaranteed unpaid leave. Still, it was considered at the time a huge political achievement. Now, 26 years later, paid leave is the big debate on Capitol Hill and in state capitals, including here in New Hampshire. There are competing proposals at our state house. The problem seems to be over how to finance coverage. Today in The Exchange, what's happening with paid family and medical leave in the Granite State? We'll hear from key players in this conversation, and let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. With me in studio, Senator Dan Feltes, Democrat of Concord, sponsor of SB 1, the bill which proposes paid family medical leave. Senator Feltes is also vice chair of Senate Finance and chair of Ways and Means. And Senator Feltes, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, State Senator Jeb Bradley, Republican of Wolfboro. He's a former small business owner. He serves on several committees, including Health and Human Services. And Senator Bradley, a big welcome back to you, too. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. The one thing you didn't say is he's wearing his Patriots
hat.
He
is wearing his Patriots hat, and we are going to put some pictures of that on Instagram, so no worries. And joining us right now, sitting down, is Bob Sanders. He is a reporter with New Hampshire Business Review. Bob has been covering this family and medical leave debate. And Bob Sanders, welcome. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, and all of you, let's just start with some voices from a hearing on this bill last week, just to give listeners a sense of what was said in that hearing room. First, a voice in favor of SB 1, Senator Feltes' bill. A Guilford woman testified about her experience taking unpaid time off to care for her dying mother.
This 3 months hospice care for mom was a gift I'll always cherish. It's time that was precious, but impacted our savings for our daughter's college and for our own retirements to this day. We needed some kind of support during that time. Many families can't handle this at all. Please pass this bill to support our families. It would have given us peace in a time of loss that we had no control over. We could not control this. We could not foresee this. Families need insurance. Please pass Senate Bill 1.
So that's a voice in favor at the hearing of SB 1, the paid family and medical leave bill. Let's hear another voice, someone else who spoke at the hearing, representing the concerns that some small business owners had. This is Robert Scully, president of the New Hampshire Motor Transport Association. He called SB 1 a mandated tax of 0.5% and said offering 12 weeks off would be a real struggle for some of his members, using the example here of oil delivery truck drivers.
So if you have a small company with 8 drivers and you had 2 of them that had to be out for this time of year for maybe a 12-week period or 8-week period to comply with this legislation, we would have a very difficult time, or they would have a very difficult time taking care of their customers. It would almost be impossible. The single largest problem our industry has is lack of drivers today. So to compound that with a mandate giving people off an extended period of time, and there's many different examples I could use, but it makes it extremely difficult.
Also in his testimony, Scully said a large percentage of his members do not want a 0.5% deduction taken out of their paychecks. So those are just some of the many, many voices who spoke at this hearing. Bob Sanders, you were there. What kind of sentiments did you pick up on at this session about the bigger conversation over paid family medical leave?
Well, I think the major debate seems to be thinking of paid family leave as a basic benefit that Putting it in with unemployment insurance, workers' compensation, something that everybody should expect, or making it like a optional benefit that companies could give or not give to compete for a workforce like health insurance is now, vacation or so forth.
So should it be mandatory, something that just everybody expects to pay into unemployment insurance, for example, or voluntary, it's a side benefit that your employer offers and you say yes or no? That's the big debate.
Basically, that's it. And what we heard at the hearing was a lot of people who wanted to, for the most part, it was people who were for the bill, and it was people who show their particular needs for it. And then there was some business groups that said this would be a hardship. There were also some business people who, maybe not at this hearing, but other times, had said it would make it easier to compete with larger businesses that offer those benefits.
You know what I'm struck by, Bob, and then I want to go to our two senators for sure. It seems to me that like 5 years ago, the debate was, should we even have this or not? Now it seems like the debate has sort of changed to, yes, we should have it, but how do we pay for it?
No, I don't think so,
no?
Really. I think the debate still is whether we should have it or
okay.
not. Because when the people who might argue, I think in the governor's case, that I'm for paid family leave, pretty much wants to leave things as it is now, but offer it for the state, and then hopefully other people can climb on. In other words, make it easier, but still make it optional, and make it a choice of businesses whether they want to provide this for their workers. And the other side still has the same thing. This should be a basic benefit that everybody should have that works.
Senator Feltus, I want to go to you next since this is your bill. And we'll get to the financing in a minute because that does seem to be the big debate here. But if you could, please, just describe for us the key elements of your bill. You know, who's eligible for paid leave, under what circumstances, for how long, how much money, just kind of the numbers on this.
Right. So 32 people testified in support of the bill, 8 in opposition at the hearing. It was a great hearing. The people who would be eligible is for non-work-related illness or injury, up to 12 weeks of 60% wage replacement insurance. So, for example, it's essential to combating the opioid epidemic. The number one cited reasons why people do not get into an intensive inpatient 30-day treatment program is because of risking their family's economic security. So having some wage replacement insurance for those situations helps in that case. It helps in caretaking for either a sick or a disabled child or for a spouse that may be, quite frankly, in hospice and dying. Having the ability to not have to choose between work and family in those situations is so critical. We value both work and family. We should also value the proposition you shouldn't have to choose between the two if at all possible. And then also new children. If you have a child or you're fostering a child, having some ability to have some temporary wage replacement insurance is so important in those situations. And we also added to the definition of qualifying leaves armed service personnel and caretaking for those sick and injured soldiers coming home. So overall, this is going to be a benefit not just to working families in those situations, but also small businesses, by the way, Laura, who are bearing the costs right now. As Bob said, they're in competition with larger businesses who are able to provide this on their own. They don't have an ability to do it in an affordable way. Having some addendum to unemployment insurance really helps small businesses compete for the jobs of tomorrow. So we're talking about combating the opioid epidemic. We're talking about attracting the workforce of tomorrow. We got to look at paid family and medical leave insurance. It's so critical for our economy, especially with Massachusetts going forward with and under Republican Governor Charlie Baker, and Maine and Vermont likely to do it too. We need a real plan to help working families and small businesses.
Well, I definitely want to ask you a little bit more about small businesses, Senator Feltus, because they did testify and they did have some concerns. But Senator Bradley, I want to bring you into this. Again, setting aside the financing for just a moment, what are the parameters of a proposal that you would support? I'm thinking that you think Governor Sununu's plan is a good idea.
Well, let me first start right out by saying the woman from Guilford that you played in the intro, I think there's a huge amount of merit to her position, and I don't dispute that one bit. I think, you know, this is important, whether it's for raising a child, taking care of a sick relative. But the question that you asked in the opening is the key question. How is the best way to accomplish this? And then the financing becomes the critical question. And the second critical question is it mandatory or is it voluntary? And so I think Governor Sununu has put out a reasonable proposal that ought to be looked at carefully because he does it in a free market approach as opposed to a government-run getting in between the relationship between an employer and an employee. And it's sort of the view of government that this is the most important thing for employees when that may not necessarily be the case. And so I think that much as we built Medicaid expansion over the last 6 years, that the proponents of family leave ought to work with the governor and try to see if there is a way that this can be done without a tax, without interfering between the relationship of an employer and an employee, that it's truly voluntary and you build on a free market solution run by insurance companies as opposed to the government and a tax. And with the problem with Senator Feltz's bill is there's no guarantee of financial solvency, and the risk is all either on employees, employers, or even potentially taxpayers, and that's a problem.
I definitely want to talk about the governor's plan, the bi-state plan with Vermont, and let listeners know we're going to go to Vermont in about 10 minutes and talk to some folks there about this sort of joint proposal. But Senator Feltus, the big hit at the hearing against your bill was, again, it's a half a percentage point income tax. Bob Scully said most of our members do not want a little bit more money taken out of their paycheck. So what about that?
Well, that's all up to businesses. Businesses can go on the market. It's a public-private partnership, contrary to what Senator Bradley just noted. It's a public-private partnership. Businesses can go on the market and get private insurance. They can provide it on their own to their workers. And then they have the option of whether or not to pay the insurance premium on behalf of their worker or do a payroll deduction. And you know what? This is actuarial-based. There's been a study, an extensive study, that based Senate Bill 1 off of. It is solvent. It's viable. And by the way, it's affordable. And it's affordable for everyone across the board as an addendum to unemployment insurance. And so what we want is we don't want a situation where small businesses are potentially being discriminated against with higher rates, which is what is suggested under Governor Sununu's concept. It's not a plan. There's no language yet to Governor Sununu's concept. But certainly that's what Governor Sununu said, is that there will be higher rates for small businesses. Small businesses are the backbone of our economy here in the state of New Hampshire. And we really need an affordable addendum to unemployment insurance that really helps small businesses attract and retain the workforce of tomorrow. They're bearing these costs anyways. And we need to make sure that everybody, Laura, whether you have a sick kid, a kid with severe and pervasive disabilities, you're caretaking for someone who may be dying, or caretaking for yourself, the opioid epidemic, that everybody has an opportunity to take leave and not have to choose between work and family.
So explain to me that I thought it was a payroll deduction. That's how this is financed. That's been, again, the critique of it. So you're saying that doesn't have to be the case?
Nope, not at all. The bill,
you got a choice?
There's a choice. The businesses can go onto the open market and they can purchase family medical leave insurance or cobble together on their own. Or they can be part of the unemployment insurance system, basically. And if they do, they have a choice of whether or not to pay that insurance premium on behalf of their workers. So I think a lot of the so-called scare tactics around this bill are what they are, scare tactics. At the end of the day, I think what we need to focus on is the real data, the real plan to get this done. That's Senate Bill 1. It's been worked on for years and years and years, and hopefully we can get it through.
Let's go to our listeners, gentlemen. Lots of emails came in even before we started the show, and we've got some calls, too. The number for you to join us with your questions or comments about this new paid family and medical leave proposal in the Senate. Also, the governor's plan announced a few weeks ago, a bi-state plan with Vermont. We'd love your questions and comments. The number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Brad is calling from Rochester. Hi, Brad. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Good. So I just wanted to sort of to reiterate what Senator Feltus was saying, you know, I own a small construction company. I'm a big supporter of paid family leave. In my company, we provide benefits that are not that common in my industry, and I'm a small business, meaning I'm less than 10 employees, you know, so sort of a very small business, if you will. And, you know, we provide paid holidays and paid vacation days, and those are things that are very rare in at least my level of construction company. My biggest concern with the governor's plan would be that we would fall into his highest price bracket or premium bracket. And, you know, that's concerning as, you know, we provide these benefits. It's going to make my overhead costs go up. I'm very I would really like to provide this benefit to my company, to my employees, but I'm concerned about our overhead going up so much, you know, falling into this higher price bracket.
So if it were offered privately, Brad, you're saying you would have to pay more. You'd rather go with the 0.5% payroll deduction.
Well, so that's a number that I've seen. You know what I mean? Like, I haven't even actually seen a number. I've just sort of seen this concept from the governor's plan of here's these four price brackets. The largest companies with the most buy-in are going to be at the lowest price point, and then small companies like myself are going to be at the highest price point. I don't know what that price point is. I haven't seen any facts. On the other side, I've seen this 0.5%. You know, that's really small money. I'd have no problem even just paying that benefit for my employees,
okay.
And I would not even put it on their shoulders.
Brad, thank you very much for the call. Bob Sanders, go ahead, jump in.
Yeah, this whole thing about a small business is really key, because those are the people who are less likely to provide this. There was a survey done, and they said that about 13% provide some kind of paid family leave.
13% of small businesses?
Period. And when it comes to small business, it's about 5%.
Now,
there was a survey of a larger companies by a PR firm, and that went up to about a third. And as the government survey is about 20% or so of a larger businesses. So I guess it depends who you're talking to. But the thing is, it's a scale thing. You have to have a large buy-in in order to keep the rates down. In a sense, that's partly behind the governor's proposal, is he has a large, with the states, a large thing, and people can buy in. But the gentleman is right. The governor doesn't have a price point, but as it goes down to smaller companies, they pay a larger percentage. It says modest in the proposal that he's asking for. And if they don't have 100% participation, it's even larger.
Okay, and this gets into the confusing aspect of insurance, and you have to have a big enough risk pool to make it worth the while of insurers to jump in, and also, Senator Bradley, to make the rates not too crazy expensive. That's the risk, is that not enough companies jump in.
Well, first of all, I think that most of the opposition came from small businesses at the hearing on Senate Bill 1, and I think that the big question is, no one really knows what the solvency of Senator Feltz's plan is going to be. I mean, he's claiming that it'll be a 0.5% tax, either paid by the employee or the employer. But then there's a provision in the bill that gives the commissioner of the Department of Employment Security unprecedented authority with no guidance to raise the tax or cut the benefits, because obviously he's scared that the solvency might be assured. And so the most important thing, I think, is to try to build something from the ground up where the risk is not on employees, employers, or small businesses for this lack of solvency that's never been determined. And that's why I think a lot of small businesses are opposed, and why this gentleman from Rochester, if he knew how much risk he was assuming, may not feel the way he does.
Okay, so after a short break, we need to get into the solvency issue. I'll give you a chance to jump in, Senator Feltus. But also, Senator Bradley, solvency was also a concern about the governor's plan because it's unclear how many people would jump in. So that was raised as well. Brad, thank you for jumping into our conversation. A lot more of your questions and comments in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy, host of The Exchange. Join me and a panel of experts in Nashua for a conversation on New Hampshire's opioid crisis. As part of NHPR's Crossroad Reporting Project, we take stock of where the state is now with this epidemic and what the future might be. Join us at the Nashua Public Library on February 7th at 6:30 p.m. Get your free tickets at nhpr.org/events.
This event is sponsored in part by Dartmouth Hitchcock and the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, new proposals to offer paid family and medical leave here in New Hampshire, including a joint proposal with the state of Vermont, announced recently by Governor Sununu. We're getting all the details and hearing from you. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Senator Dan Feltes is here. He's a Democrat from Concord. He's sponsor of one of the bills we're talking about, SB1, proposing paid family medical leave. Also with us, State Senator Jeb Bradley, Republican of Wolfboro, and Bob Sanders, a reporter with New Hampshire Business Review. One more time, the number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. So, Senator Feltes, just before the break, Senator Bradley was expressing concerns that your plan with this 0.5% payroll deduction might not be actuarially sound. And that has been a point of contention between these competing plans, that which one is on more solid financial footing.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate Senator Bradley's observation, but it's incorrect. I mean, the reality is that Senate Bill 1 is based on an actual actuarial study that's been looked at and looked at and looked at. And there's really no competing plans, Laura, unfortunately. I mean, what we have here is I respect and appreciate that the governor had a press conference and talked about a concept. The reality is we haven't seen his plan. No one knows where his plan is. We've heard talking points and bullet points about it. And in fact, he just went out for a request for information about a possible plan. So you're not issuing a request for information if you actually have a plan. And I hope to see it. And I want to see it at some point. And obviously, the governor campaigned in 2016 and said he supports paid family leave for all New Hampshire workers. And then after a bipartisan effort went through the legislature and made it to the Senate, Governor Sununu threw cold water on it, and it failed. And then in the 2018 gubernatorial election, in a debate with Molly Kelly, he said, "I have a plan. It's been certified to be solvent by my commissioners." And still, we haven't seen this plan.
The broad parameters of it, though, are voluntary. You can sign up if you want, be run by private insurers. There'd be buy-in from both Vermont and New Hampshire state employees, so you have a big enough pool. So we know a little bit about the approach.
Well, based on the concepts, based on what's been said at press conferences, I can say that there's a lot of concern out there, including by insurance carriers who testified, one who testified at the hearing, and I asked her if there's just a proposal to have state employees, do you think that in the private market that paid family and medical leave insurance will be offered in an affordable, accessible way across the board? And she said, no, that's impossible. It's not solvent. It's not viable. And so what we have here in Senate Bill 1 is a piece of legislation that's been worked on for years that's affordable and available to all Granite Staters, and in particular to small businesses who are struggling to compete for the workers of tomorrow. And you know what? If you have, if you want to combat the opioid epidemic, we need to make it available to everybody and affordable. If you want to attract and retain the workforce of tomorrow and help new families and working families who are deciding where to live, we got to make it accessible and affordable to everybody. And if you want to deal with our caregiving crisis, we got to make it accessible and affordable to everybody. That's what Senate Bill 1 does after years of work and study. And hopefully we can move forward on it.
Well, let's go back to our listeners, gentlemen. And Andy sent us an email. He says, this was also the same rationale underlying the original proposals for Medicaid in 1965. Policymakers assured everyone that it was a relatively minor financial commitment made necessary by our obligation to working families. Andy says, today it's the largest single line item in the budget of virtually every state and the federal government's single largest obligation to this state. What makes the story different this time? Senator Feltes, I'll let you jump in quickly there because that's a critique of your approach, but anybody else can jump in as well. Concern that, you know, yeah, it starts small, but it gets big.
while this is based on an actuarial study, 12 weeks, everything that's in this bill is based on years of data and research and effort. You know, obviously, if you want to be able to have something that works in the insurance context, you have to have a bigger pool. And this is that pool. As Senator Bradley knows, who's worked on insurance issues, and I've worked with him on Medicaid and other issues in the past, is that the larger the pool, the more affordable, the costs are low. That's what we have here. Basically, the proposal, the concept, as I understand it from Governor Sununu, again, we haven't seen anything on it, but in terms of a plan, but in terms of the concept, is basically the status quo. And working families and small businesses can no longer afford the status quo. We need real leadership. We need to move forward on this.
Bob Sanders, can you jump in, too, on the critique that Senator Feltes had of the governor's plan, that it's vague? We don't know a lot of detail yet.
Well, it's not totally absent. I mean, he did put out this request for information, which is kind of a weird hybrid of asking for information and kind of asking for semi-bids from some companies, if you read it. The thing is that, I mean, both of these things are actuarially sound. I don't think there's any question of that. I mean, he's any insurance company who wouldn't would not come in and do it if it wasn't actuarially sound. So it's either going to happen or not. And if it does happen, the rates are going to be set for other businesses and they'll just have to pay more. So it's actuarially sound. The same thing with the other proposal. It allows some flexibility in rates, not only rates, but in terms of benefits to make sure that everything balances. So I don't see any big jeopardy of on either case of things collapsing.
With either approach.
Either approach, yes.
A couple emails I'd like to share with you guys. Anne-Marie on Facebook says, income tax? Question mark. Also, Julia says, SB1 is an example of a childless tax and a healthy person tax all in one. If you can't afford to have children and do not have a job or family situation that allows you to take care of them, you should not be having children for your own and their financial sake. Julia also says chronic medical conditions cost us so much in health care, the majority of which are preventable through lifestyle and dietary changes. Julia says SB1 ensures that those who make the right personal decisions to care for themselves physically and financially will continue to subsidize those who do not. So, Amory and Julia, thank you very much for the comments. Go ahead, Senator Bradley.
Well, first of all, I want to agree with your first emailer. It's clearly an income tax. I mean, it is a payroll tax. Now, the business may pay it, but most likely the employees are going to pay it. And to get back to the solvency issue, I mean, I'm sorry for being skeptical and asking tough questions, but the bill last year started out with 12 weeks at 0.5%. And as it worked its way through the process, the percentage that would be withheld went up to 0.67, and the weeks shrunk to 6, which is what California is,
six weeks.
Now, this bill has 12 weeks, 0.5%, but the unprecedented authority for the Commissioner of Employment Security to either reduce the benefits or raise the income tax or whatever you want to call it. So that's why people like me are really skeptical about this and believe that we ought to do what we did with Medicaid expansion, work together, try the governor's approach, see if it works, because I believe there's a good opportunity to make it work. I do think I agree with Bob. The governor's going to have to smooth out the risk over the business entities. But the problem, to get back to some of the bigger problems of Senator Feltes's, the risk of insolvency is on employees, employers, or ultimately taxpayers, whereas the risk in Governor Sununu's plan is on insurance companies. And that's a huge difference in how we approach problems and solve problems in New Hampshire. This is a problem that can be solved, but it can't be solved if, you know, Senator Feltes is just out of hand rejecting what the governor's trying to do.
So, Senator Feltes, we should hit this Department of Employment Security Commissioner issue right on the head, because that did come up in the hearing. Concern that this bill allows the DES commissioner to say, oh, maybe we need a little more money. Let's raise the payroll tax and so forth. Set rates, set benefit.
So that's what our Republican colleagues said during the last debate, which is that there needs to be some authority with the department to adjust. There needs to be a sustainability mechanism. Now that there's a sustainability mechanism put in the bill, and happy to take it out if that gets Senator Bradley's support, it's being criticized. Let's get back to the issue of the public-private partnership. There's a public-private partnership in Senate Bill 1. It requires the department to go out to bid with private and carriers to do the administration of this. So to say that that's a key difference, actually that's the same. So in any event, the upshot is this. We have a bill that's been worked on and worked on and worked on. And in fact, let's look at it this way. Governor Sununu campaigned on this in 2016. The bill that we worked on, bipartisan bill, passed the Republican House 3 times, made it to the Senate. Governor Sununu came in and killed it. Then in 2018, Governor Sununu is campaigning and says he has a plan, and it's certified as by his commissioners, and no one's seen it yet. So you got to lead on this, and leadership means putting pen to paper and getting out there and advocating, and that's what we're doing on Senate Bill 1, and that's why working families and small businesses will have an affordable and available plan, guaranteed affordability and availability under Senate Bill 1. That's what this is all about.
So maybe, does your bill allow the DES commissioner to set the rates?
It does. It allows, after a series of steps, consultation with the Unemployment Insurance Advisory Committee, et cetera. So that is something that our Republican colleagues previously wanted. It sounds like they don't want now.
So you're willing to negotiate on that?
Absolutely.
Because there was a concern that this is an unelected position. Who is this person? Why should they be allowed to
Absolutely.
Set these rates?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, look, that's one of the finer points that certainly we can work on. The overarching thing is whether or not, as Bob put it, you want to have something that is an addendum to unemployment insurance that's affordable and accessible to working families and small businesses, or do you want basically the status quo, which is how I understand Governor Sununu's comments at the recent press conference.
All right. Well, sharing a couple more emails from our listeners. This is an anonymous email that came in. This person says, if I had not had access to paid family medical leave, I would have had to quit my job as a tenured professor to take care of my teenage son who was in a mental health crisis. The state, as you know, is sorely lacking in mental health care providers and institutions to assist this population. Trying to navigate connecting him with the right providers and getting him access to care and support was and still is time and labor intensive. Family medical leave may have saved my son's life. Thank you for that email, and good luck with your son, by the way. As we talk about this plan that Governor Sununu put forward a couple weeks ago with the governor of Vermont, I want to go to Vermont now, gentlemen, and talk to Peter Hirschfeld. He's Capitol Bureau reporter for Vermont Public Radio. And Peter, thank you for taking time out. We appreciate it.
It's great to be with you, Laura.
So what was the reaction in the Green Mountain State to this sort of bi-state plan that both our governors put forward a couple weeks ago?
Well, the reaction critically in the legislature was not terribly favorable. They were really underwhelmed. I should mention at the outset here that in Vermont, both the House of Representatives and the Senate are overwhelmingly controlled by Democrats. Now, they're really happy to see their Republican governor come out so forcefully in favor of the concept of paid family leave. But they say there's just a fatal flaw in the governor's plan, and they say that flaw is the fact that the plan would be voluntary, that workers could opt in or not as they choose. And they say, look, if you make this a voluntary plan, the only people who are going to sign up are expectant mothers and fathers or folks who otherwise might anticipate a need arising in the next year or so that would allow them to draw down that benefit. And they say if the only ones that are going to use it are the only ones that are going to buy the benefit are the ones that are going to use it, then premiums are going to skyrocket, and the benefit is only going to be available to people that can afford that, not the lower-income folks that probably need it most.
So that sounds like a lot like the arguments that we're hearing here in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
So the support of state employees has been said to be key to this, again, bi-state plan by the governors. What are Vermont state employees saying?
Thumbs down is the message we're getting so far. You know, it's interesting. State employees are an influential political force in the Vermont legislature, and it's one of the constituencies that lobbied in favor of the mandatory paid leave proposal that's been moving through the Vermont legislature in recent years. I think Phil Scott might have been hoping to gain some momentum for this voluntary program by offering it for free, essentially, to state workers, and thereby kind of bringing that constituency into his corner. But the State Employees Association does not seem to be biting. They say they have a lot of the same concerns about the sustainability of a voluntary plan that Democrats in the House and Senate do. And they say the only way to build a successful statewide paid leave program is to require everybody to pay into the till.
So what competing proposals are there this year to, you know, as an alternative to this plan put forward by our two governors?
Yeah, Democratic leadership in both the House and Senate held their own press conference just a few days after Phil Scott and Chris Sununu rolled out their plan, and they put forward some paid leave legislation of their own. This plan that they put forward, unlike the one put forward by the Republican governors, would be mandatory, and it would assess a payroll tax of a little less than 1%. That would be split evenly between employers and workers, and it would create a universal benefit for virtually every worker in the state, where they could take 12 weeks off at two-thirds pay, I believe, after the birth of a newborn or to tend to an ailing family member.
Wow. Okay. So a little less than 1%. So more of a payroll tax deduction than what we've got here in New Hampshire, but mandating that it's split evenly between employers and workers.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You know, last year they were looking at a plan that would be paid for entirely by workers. They've decided to take a different approach this year. It's unclear to me at this point whether that's to leave room for some bargaining and compromise with the governor. But they feel like both sides ought to be chipping in.
So do Democrats have a veto-proof majority now?
You know, in theory, but Democrats in Vermont, like Democrats in New Hampshire and Democrats everywhere else, I suppose, are not a monolith, right? So while Democrats and progressives combined do have a theoretical supermajority in Montpelier, what's not clear is whether or not they can summon the power of that supermajority to override a veto of their mandatory paid leave program. It's something we will probably find out if the governor and Democratic leaders can't find agreement in the interim.
So if this mandatory paid leave proposal goes through your House and Senate, Peter, and let's assume that Governor Scott vetoes it, it's unclear whether there's enough votes to override that veto.
It is unclear. I mean, it's worth noting that last year, Democrats in both the House and Senate passed a mandatory paid leave program, went to the governor's desk, he vetoed it, and it passed by pretty comfortable margins in both chambers. I think it got 87 or 82 votes in the House. Since then, Democrats have picked up quite a few seats in the House. They gained 10 seats, so the numbers are different, but whether or not every Democrat is going to vote to override the governor's veto in 2019 is a real unknown at this point.
You know, just curious, Peter, has anything like this been tried before in New England, where sort of two states get together and say, you know, we're too small maybe to do this on our own, but let's join forces and see if it works?
You know, I don't know, Laura, if something of this sort has been introduced before. What I do know is that we have not seen any other jurisdiction that has passed a paid leave program make it voluntary. If you look at the six states that have done this, that have gone before us, they've all made it mandatory, and for all the same reasons that we're hearing folks in Vermont and New Hampshire who support a mandatory program say that that's the way you need to do it. So if New Hampshire and Vermont do go down this road of a voluntary program, they are in uncharted territory and would be sort of an experiment for whether or not something like this could actually work.
Well, Peter, it's good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
That's Peter Hirschfeld. Again, he's Capitol Bureau reporter for Vermont Public Radio. Coming up, more of your questions and comments on proposed paid family and medical leave here in the Granite State. Join us, 1-800-892-6477, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be right back. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, a new national strategy on pain. As it's being drafted, what should it include? Let us know. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. at nhpr.org in advance of the show. And join us tomorrow morning live at 9. This hour, we're looking at the debate in New Hampshire over paid family and medical leave. A bill failed in the Senate last year, but as we're hearing, it's a top priority for Democrats in New Hampshire this session. We'd love your thoughts and questions. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook or Twitter is NHPR Exchange. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. And all of you Codys calling from Concord. Hi, Cody. You're on the air. Thanks for being with us.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Go ahead, Cody.
Yeah, so I just want to share a little bit of my family's story. My brother, in 2015, attempted to recover from alcoholism, which for anyone who doesn't know, the withdrawal symptoms are brutal, and it landed him in the hospital for about 3 weeks. You know, at the end of that, I was talking to him a little bit of whether or not he was going to go to recovery, and I remember him being really concerned about returning to work, which, you know, I think a lot of folks face. So he, you know, went back to work and was good for a few months, but relapsed and then ended up in the hospital after he tried to recover again. This time it was for about 4.5 months. My parents during that time took every time that they could to be with him. And, you know, their employers were great, but they still would split days with him in the morning and then drive into work in the afternoon. And, you know, this still wouldn't have fixed everything. They still would have had to go through all that. My brother passed away in March of 2016, and I don't know if this would have changed that. Thank you.
Yeah.
But it would have, you know, given him that one less worry to go through. It might have allowed my brother to seek further treatment after his first hospital stay, and, you know, it just would have been that one less piece of stress.
Well, Cody, condolences for your brother, and I've got two sisters, so I understand that's really hard. I really appreciate you calling in. And what do you think, Senator Bradley? You know, as he put it so eloquently, it would not have fixed everything, but not having to worry about money during that very difficult time would have helped.
Well, I go back to what I said originally. There is a lot of merit to having paid family leave. The question is, how do you do it and how do you finance it? And just listening to the reporter from Vermont, I mean, again, sorry to be a skeptic, but they're already talking about 1% split between the employee and the employer. So where's the sweet spot in terms of solvency? Senator Feltz's plan is 0.5%. Does it have to be more? Who's going to pick up the risk if it's not? I almost guarantee you it will fall on either the taxpayers or the business owners in the state of New Hampshire. And here's another thing that we haven't talked about, and a reason to try to do it through insurance companies as opposed to a government-run program. There's an $18 million likely upfront cost. To get it going. $10 million in this budget. And in this budget, we're trying to continue our work on mental health, continue our work to fix DCYF, the division of state government that deals with abuse and neglected kids, to try to reestablish stabilization grants for education, continued substance abuse funding. Even though the plan is to repay the money, is that ever going to happen? What will the cost overruns be? So it's going to put even more pressure on the budget when there are crises, drugs and mental health, and DCYF that have to be resolved.
Well, and Bob Sanders, how have other states done it? So we heard about Democrats in Vermont, their approach. I think you mentioned earlier that 5 or 6 states already do this. So how have other states worked through these fiscal issues that we're wrestling with?
Well, it's like unemployment insurance. They adjust it as so that the health of the fund is stable. And in that case, the employment the Department of Employment Security does that without legislative approval in New Hampshire. Nobody makes a big deal about that. In Massachusetts, they split. A lot of people, when they say family leave, as one caller said, "Oh, I don't want to pay for someone else's kids." It's not just kids. It's elderly people and so forth. You might be taking care of your mom. You didn't plan on that. And so that isn't like, "Oh, I choose to have kids and everybody pay for me."
Well, a health crisis can hit anyone, anywhere, anytime. I know extremely healthy people who have come down with very bad cancers.
And it's disability insurance. Well, so it's yourself. So you don't have the choice to not get cancer Or some other, or break your leg, or whatever. So that's one understanding. It's kind of like unemployment insurance could happen to anyone. In Massachusetts, they split that. The disability is paid for out of one fund and in a certain way, which employers don't contribute to, and family leave employers do contribute to it.
Oh, that's interesting.
And they're just starting, so we don't know how that's going to go. Rhode Island's been doing this for a long time. It's the best state, I think, to compare us to because it's small. I mean, California's been doing this for 10 years, and New York and has been doing it. New Jersey has been doing it. In fact, there's one speaker who said that there are 25 leave bills going through the states right now, and that probably 10 will pass, including probably surrounding Vermont's the exception, but Maine has a Democratic government, so probably surrounding New Hampshire, and we'll be this little island if we don't pass it. That's one of the arguments.
We'll see some experimentation then in the other states. Maybe we can learn from that experimentation and see what works. I want to go back to our listeners. Lots of calls and emails coming in. Don's joining us from Bow. Hi, Don. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. How you doing?
Fine, Don. Go ahead.
I'm a little worried about this because I pay enough in taxes. I don't want to have to pay for other people's problems on top of my problems. I don't want to pay any more taxes to anybody for this. I'm done with this. You need to stop spending money that you don't have.
Well, Bob, thank you for the call. And this is a hit that the bill has taken repeatedly, Senator Feltes. It keeps coming up. A lot of people at the hearing and some of our emailers this morning as well feel like Don does. You know, it's an income tax and I'm done with taxes.
Well, there's already a cost to society. There's already a cost to small businesses. There's already a cost to businesses who can't retain workers because of the absence of access to family and medical leave insurance. There's already a cost to society for failing for people not getting an opioid treatment because they don't have family and medical leave insurance.
But given there's that sentiment that we hear from Don and Bo, why not try it in the voluntary way first?
Well, you know, look, we went through a process legislatively with the voluntary way, and Governor Sununu opposed it, and it failed. So, I mean, look, what we're doing right now is working on an actuarially sound, data-driven plan that provides access to affordable family medical leave insurance so we can combat the opioid epidemic, we can attract and retain the workforce of tomorrow, and we can deal with our caregiving crisis that we have in our state. And Laura, I got an 18-month-old and a 4-month-old, Iris and Josie, at home. And we were fortunate that when we were able to adopt Iris and Josie, that I was not in session and that Aaron had paid family leave. And you can't get that time back when you have a new child. You can't get the time back when your spouse may be in hospice and passing away. And if you have to choose between work and family because this type of insurance is not available, which it's not in the state of New Hampshire, and it's not going to be available in an affordable and accessible way under the concept that's been floated, which we haven't seen on paper by Governor Sununu, but we need to move forward. We need to move forward with a real paid family and medical leave insurance plan, and that's what Senate Bill 1 does, and I look forward to working with Democrats, Republicans, and anyone who wants to work on it on a real plan.
Well, and in a couple minutes, I'll ask all of you where the meet in the middle spot might be. But back to our email, Amelia says, I think the idea of paid family and medical leave is very important, but I do not see my circumstances covered in either option being discussed today. Amelia says, I'm a self-employed consultant, so I don't receive a paycheck from an employer, so a state-run program will not help my family. Amelia says, Governor Sununu's idea of a program run by the insurance may help, but insurance companies are notorious in excluding certain factors from coverage. Amelia, thank you for the call. All of you, go ahead. Senator Feltes, you first.
Well, she can get in just like she can get in unemployment
insurance.
You have
a lot of self-employed people.
Yeah, she can get into the plan under Senate Bill 1.
Senator Bradley, do you want to jump in? I'm especially interested in her concern that, you know, insurers, as she says, are notorious for excluding certain factors from coverage.
Well, I think the most important thing, if we try to go the route that Governor Sununu wants to go, which is that you build it from the ground up, you build people that, you know, want to participate, so you build the pool to make it as big as possible.
Starting with state employees.
Starting with state employees, then you have that opportunity to do it. And, you know, to get to your point about trying to meet in the middle and cooperate, I mean, you know, let's think about some of the issues that Governor Sununu's tried to tackle, and successfully, mental health, DCYF, kindergarten. Chris Sununu's a problem solver, so we ought to give this a chance to work on a voluntary basis where it's not an income tax, where insurers take the risk, not taxpayers, not business owners, not employees. We already heard Vermont is likely to be double the assessment that New Hampshire is. I just outlined the $18 million of upfront costs, and I think a key question that we really haven't talked about this morning is, what do employees really want? Is it all paid family medical leave, or do employees want better health care benefits? Do they want more flex time, more vacation, the ability to work from home, maybe just better pay? And so by getting government into the middle, as I think you've had a lot of callers or emailers today suggest we're doing, that doesn't treat employees and what they may want in an appropriate way. It is a top-down approach that says the government knows best for employees what they want and what they'll have, and oh, by the way, pay your income tax to make it happen. So my advice to Senator Feltz is to do what we did on Medicaid, okay? We brought people together and we created a model that both sides could live with. Now, not everybody was comfortable with every provision, but 50,000 people have health insurance today because we did it right. Unfortunately, Senator Feltz is like, it's my way or the highway. When you have that kind of approach, Dan, oftentimes you get the highway. And I think that would be unfortunate here.
So tell us how Democrats in the Senate, and you've got a majority, are going to meet in the middle, Senator Feltz.
Well, Senator Bradley knows it wasn't my way or the highway. In fact, we worked with Republicans on the bill in the last session. In fact, what Senator Bradley did is took his cues from Governor Sununu and killed the bill. And now Senator Bradley and her Republican colleagues are waiting around for Governor Sununu to finally come up with his plan. We can't afford to wait around. Working families and small businesses in this state can't afford to wait around for Governor Sununu to finally come up with his plan that he promised the last two election cycles. Working families struggling with the opioid epidemic, struggling to get ahead and stay ahead, living paycheck to paycheck, small businesses that are competing for the jobs of tomorrow, they can't afford to wait. And we go out to bid in this bill. We don't know what the upfront costs are going to be because it's a public-private partnership. You go out to RFP, and we're going to go ahead and do
proposals, yeah.
On this, and that's a function of input from our Republican colleagues and Democratic colleagues.
Although
so we
the
have,
hearing, Senator Feltz, I listened into some of it. There was concern from small businesses especially who said, you know, we got enough going on. We can't manage one more thing.
Well, there was concerns from a couple representatives of trade organizations. And certainly, and some small businesses oppose and a lot of small businesses support. And small businesses support in large measure because, number one, they don't have the opportunity to provide an affordable, accessible plan for their employees. And then number two is they're seeing, based on this concept from Governor Sununu, that small businesses will be discriminated against in the costs.
Because if you don't have a big enough pool, it gets more expensive.
You get charged more as a small business owner under Governor Sununu's concept. And again, we got to see the plan, but that's the concept, and that's been something that Governor Sununu has acknowledged. So look,
well,
at the end of the day,
maybe we should talk again once the details of Governor Sununu's plan come out.
That would be
good. Go ahead, Bob.
I don't see why I don't pass both of these. Governor Sununu's plan is aimed at state workers, which cannot be put into this other plan, which covers private workers. And let people choose. In other words, have a payroll today. If they don't want the payroll deduction, they could try to sign up for the whatever the governor puts out. But that way,
the
everybody's covered.
Managed.
So that's a possibility where people – they're not mutually exclusive. Both have voluntary aspects to it. But one would cover everybody, and one would cover whoever signs up.
That's really interesting. Could you do that? Do one for the
I
state
these
employee?
Guys.
Senator Bradley?
Yeah, no, I think that – I mean, nice idea, Bob, but I think practically speaking, that's probably the one thing that Senator Feltz and I would agree on. This morning is probably impractical to do it. But I think, you know, my advice to my friend Senator Feltz is work in the same way that we worked on Medicaid. It wasn't easy. It was very difficult going back 6 years. But 50,000 people have health insurance because we listened to each other. We worked together. We weren't always comfortable.
Well, and not it took everybody a long got time. Every... There were a lot of special sessions and special meetings and commissions and committees.
And guess what? 50,000 people now have health insurance. We've protected taxpayers. We have a reasonable work requirement. All of this can be done, but it takes hard work. And I think that, you know, again, to not repeat the phrase my way or the highway, when it's only one way and all other alternatives are rejected, as I think Senator Feltz is trying to do, and when the concerns that get raised, legitimate concerns about last year's bill, legitimate concerns with this year's bill, aren't addressed, that's a problem. And it's our job to point out the problems.
Well, Senator Feltz, just go ahead, and then I got a couple more emails for you.
Well, they were addressed, and in fact, we've incorporated a lot of the comments from Governor Sununu and our Republican colleagues in this year's version of the bill. We sent a letter to Governor Sununu, and we've heard crickets, and instead we heard a press conference about this new concept. So, look, at the end of the day, we've been working on this and working in a bipartisan way. In fact, we had a bipartisan bill that went through a Republican House that Senator Bradley and Governor Sununu killed. So, look, at the end of the day, let's continue to work in a bipartisan way where we can. And it appears to me that Senator Bradley and Governor Sununu don't want to work on this. That's okay. I want to work on it. Let's work together. Working families and small businesses can't afford to wait around. We have a real plan. Let's get it done.
Well, a couple emails have come in, and I won't have time to read all of them, but thank you. Michael emailed. He's concerned. He says, can the senator quantify the cost to employers? How much exactly does the lack of family leave cost our employers? That'll help us weigh the cost and benefits of this program. Olivia sent us an email. She says, New Hampshire native, 35 weeks along with my first child. Congratulations, Olivia. She says, I work in a field with tremendous workforce shortages and problems retaining employees. I feel paid family leave can help attract young professionals to the Granite State. And if we can't figure it out, people like me who have spent their entire lives here will flock more to family-friendly places. So that's from Olivia. I wish we had time to address Michael's questions. He says finding out exactly the cost to employers would help him weigh the cost and benefit of the program. So I think we'll have to address
that. That is the whole point. We're not disagreeing on the fact that there ought to be a program to help people that need it. But how do we best pay for it? Is it voluntary? Does it fall back on taxpayers and small business owners? And do employees really get what they want? These are unanswered questions that Senator Feltz wants to say this is all great, but he's got to answer those questions.
All right, and we will answer them in a later show. The session is still young, and I think we'll be addressing this issue again. Thank you all very much for coming in. I appreciate it. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.